Accession number 12175, rule 2.
Big Willow Reel 2. So this was dive bombing rather than high level attacks?
Yes, it was both. We had dive bombing and JU-88s, which were high level bombing from about 10,000 feet, something like that, not very high. And of course the Italian torpedo bombers came in very low and they tried to coordinate their attacks so that to split the anti-aircraft fire, but they were unsuccessful, fortunately.
And the Walrus didn't go up?
No, we didn't go up at all.
Would it have been suicide to have gone up?
Well, it was unnecessary because we had the two carriers and with fighters and so forth to protect us. There was really no point in the Walrus going up at all.
Which month was this Malta convoy?
It was May 41.
Just after the Bismarck was sunk?
Just after the Bismarck was sunk, yes.
So it was a very powerful convoy to escort only 5 merchant ships?
That's right. And because of the very heavy attacks, it was decided not to send another convoy through the Med, and everything after that had to go right round the Cape and up the and to Port Said. Much longer journey, of course.
And this convoy was really from Jib to Alex?
Yes.
Did you have a lecture before the convoy went through about its importance to get it through?
Yes, the captain, directly we left Jib, the captain told us what we were going to do and said he thought we were going to have our baptism of fire. And as we came out of Jib late evening, instead of turning to port and going up the Mediterranean, we turned the starboard out to the Atlantic. And then when it was dark, we turned back again because, of course, there were spies all over the place in Spain reporting the movement of ships and so forth. And so the idea was to try to fool the enemy a bit. And we turned back in the night and were well away from the Straits of Gibraltar by the next morning. But they found us about a day later, and then of course they started attacking us.
So your force turned back after the Eastern force picked up the merchant ships, or did you go?
No, we went straight through and we remained in Alexandria and joined the fleet there, and we were then supporting the evacuation of Crete.
What do you remember about that?
We were attacked heavily. I think the crews and destroyers had a much worse time than we did. We had one 500-pound bomb, it was thought, which landed on the forward 15-inch gun turret and didn't explode. Fortunately, I think it killed one man inside from the shock of it, but did no damage. And after that, they kept the battleships well away from Crete, and the cruisers and the destroyers went in and evacuated the army. And that picture I showed you of the Orion, she was loaded with troops and badly bombed. Many, many of the troops were killed. Coming back into Alexandria, but she made it back.
What time of day was the Queen Elizabeth damaged by enemy attack off Crete?
I can't remember. I think it was in the afternoon, but I simply can't remember that.
Was it frightening?
I didn't feel very much at the time. I was my action station was near the Fleet Arum office, which was aft, and this bomb dropped forward. You see, forward of the main bridge. So,
how much could you feel the impact?
Oh, the whole ship shuddered. And it was very fortunate, really, that it didn't explode. But we think it was only a smallish bomb. It could have been a 1,000-pounder, but probably more like a 500-pound bomb, dive bomb.
Did the fore part of the ship look very much of a mess?
No, because it didn't explode. And it just dented the gun turret. And then, I suppose, went over the side.
Going back to Gibraltar, what was it like being based in Gibraltar during the war?
Of course, we could go ashore, but obviously we couldn't go into Spain. We were not there very long. I would say we were only there for about 10 days before we took this convoy through. So we didn't really have much time to do anything.
And Alexandria?
Alexandria, of course, we went ashore. There were occasional bombings of Alexandria. I remember I went ashore to see the film Gone with the Wind there, which is a very lengthy film. And the only ventilation they had is the roof opened. And then suddenly there was an air raid in the middle of this, and they had to close the roof, and we all went outside and trying to shelter somewhere or other. And so the film took about 5 hours to see. But it didn't happen very often.
What else would you do ashore in Alexandria apart from going to the films?
Oh, we used to go to the races. Horse racing was still going on now. And in fact, my sister was getting married in England. Her name was Sybil. And there was a horse called Sybil running in one of the races, which I backed, and came in last. So I wrote to her and said, "I'm sorry, I can't give you a wedding present. I've lost my money on a horse of your name."
How did you get on with the inhabitants of Alexandria?
Well, we found them reasonably friendly. Until it came to just before Alamein, when they really thought that the Germans were going to take over, and they became then rather anti.
How would they show their anti feelings then?
I was asked to take the squadron personnel across the delta from Alexandria down to Faid, which was on the edge of the Great Bitter Lakes. And so we had a convoy of lorries. And I had a staff car in front with the driver, and we stopped at some small village in the delta to ask the way. And as the driver went off again, we felt a terrific bump, and we'd gone over something. And I looked back, and I saw there was a man there, and we'd gone right over his body. And we think that this man was already dead, and they'd put him there on purpose in order to make some money out of it. Anyway, I said, drive on. We drove on to the next village and found there were barriers up there, people trying to stop us and everything. However, we just didn't stop. We went straight through and away. That was just one of the things that it made me feel that they were a bit anti.
So you crashed through the barriers?
Crashed through the barriers and forced on.
What did the barriers consist of?
Oh, just wooden packing cases and this kind of thing. Nothing. They didn't have time to put up as a proper barrier. Another thing that happened there is quite interesting. I was asked to take the captain of the fleet, Captain Brownrigg was his name, for a conference in Ismailia on the canal from Alexandra Harbour, and we took off from the harbour we got right across the delta and were then arriving about 50 miles or 60 miles, I suppose, of the desert. And suddenly the inner war, as this was, and suddenly there was a terrific shudder, and as if something had broken, and the whole plane started shaking like this. So I thought the best thing to do was to land. And so I landed with the wheels up on the hull, because I thought if we had soft sand down below, it would turn the thing over. So we landed on the hull, and in fact we found that the ground was quite solid. I could have landed on the wheels, I think. And so we got out, and Captain, after about half an hour or so, an army van turned up and took Captain Brownrigg off to his mill. And there was some firing going on, which he told me the story afterwards, that there was small arms fire going on. I don't think anybody was firing at us, but he thought they were. And then another car came up, and I had my petty officer pilot with me, and in this van was his brother, who was in the army. Most extraordinary coincidence, he was stationed nearby. And we discovered that the reason for all this vibration was that the piece about a foot or tip of one of the four air screw blades had been broken off because a flame trap on the engine. You could always see a walrus at night because it was like a Catherine wheel. It showed up at night, and we'd been doing some night flying, we had these flame traps on, which prevented this circle. And the reason we had them on was because about 3 weeks earlier, we'd been asked to take some documents, fly them into Tobruk Harbour. And Tobruk at that time was surrounded by the enemy. And they thought that a walrus could fly these in at night. And the garrison of Tobruk were detailed off to make a diversion by firing their guns in some other direction, and we were supposed to come in to Tobruk Harbour. And unfortunately, the wind, Tobruk Harbour was very long, narrow, and the wind, instead of blowing up and down it, always blew across it. So it meant we had to come down an escarpment of about 200 feet and cut the engine, and then they were going to put two lights across the harbour for us to land on. So we were coming right over enemy territory, going down, landing, and then they were going to put a camouflage net over us during the day, and then we were to fly out the following night. So we practice landing in the dark with a flame float outside Alexandra Harbour for about 2 weeks. We painted the aircraft black, and as I said, we put these flame traps on as well, so we were less likely to be spotted. But fortunately, in the end, they got a submarine to take these documents in, so we were relieved of that task, which I think would be very dangerous, really.
But were you suggesting that this plane had been sabotaged?
Oh, no, it just, one of the flame traps just fell off, you see, and that was of course, the damage.
But coming back to the attitudes of the population in Alexandria and northern Egypt, did you ever have citizens of Egypt say to you that they were in favour of the access, or saying that the British ought to go home, or anything of that kind?
No, I don't think quite that. There was a sort of feeling of, as the Germans advanced to Alamein, there was a definite sort of feeling, anti-British feeling, certainly in Alexandria, I don't know about anywhere else.
Which month would that incident with Brown Rig have been in, do you think?
That was in September 41. I can give the exact date because a book was published about the walrus, and it gives an account of exactly what happened.
September 41?
Yes. Is it 41? Yes, 41. Yes, 41.
Now, coming back to the narrative again, you were talking about the sinking of the Queen Elizabeth and what happened to you afterwards. Can we pick it up there?
Could I go back before that?
Yes.
Because to tell you about the Baron.
Right.
The sinking of the Baron. The three battleships, we had no carrier at either end of the Mediterranean then. Three battleships are going to do a bombardment of the enemy supply lines. At a place called Bardia, I think it was. And so three of us with destroyers and I think a couple of cruisers were steaming westwards in echelon echelon port, and Queen Elizabeth was leading. And at about 4:30, I think it was, in the afternoon, I was having tea in the wardroom, and somebody rushed in and said, "The Baron's sinking." And so, just after that, they signed an action station, so I grabbed my camera and went up to my action station which was on the bridge then. And she went down in about 4 minutes from the time she was first noticed to me, to be healing over, and just as the smokestack was almost in the water, and men were crawling all down the bilge keel, hundreds and hundreds of men like ants crawling down it, she blew up in the most enormous explosion. And that was the end of her. She was hit apparently by about four torpedoes from a German submarine, who'd actually come in under the screen, underneath the destroyer, undetected. And so she fired from really point-blank range and couldn't miss. And the Barham, of course, unlike the Elizabeth and the Valiant, had not been reconstructed. And her watertight compartments were not efficient at all. And I think she blew up because she had 6-inch guns down each side, I think about 4 on each port and starboard sides. In the Valiant and Queen Elizabeth, these had been removed, and we had 2 4.5 anti-aircraft guns forward and 2 aft in both ships. And it was 6-inch magazines in the Barham that blew up. Anyway, the Admiral Pridham Whipple was on the bridge, the Admiral's bridge in the Barham. The captain went down to the ship, Captain Cook, I think his name was, and the Admiral and his Australian flag lieutenant, who we knew very well, and told me the story afterwards. He said, we waited until the bridge was practically in the water, and we just tipped off the bridge into the water and did a breaststroke away. And we were about 50 yards away when she blew up.
Did Pridham Whipple tell you that personally?
No, his flag lieutenant did. Yeah. Actually, Pridham Whipple's son was in the Fleet Arran. I can't remember the name of the flag lieutenant.
How near to the Barham were you?
Oh, we were about 200 yards, I suppose. 200 or 300 yards.
It must have been an awesome sight.
It certainly was. Certainly was. And as I said, then we were catapulted off to Alexander, which was about 200 miles away by that time, to advise the CNC's office what had happened, because of radio silence, and we landed there after dark and reported to the CNC's office, told them what had happened, so that they could prepare to receive casualties. I think there were about something like 300 survivors out of a complement of something like 1,200. Surprising, really, that there were any survivors at all, I thought. And then we decided to have a night out in Alexandria. So we took a taxi from the CNC's office into town, and the taxi driver, in fact, the first thing he said to us was that he'd heard on the radio that the Barham had been sunk. So all the secrecy was really no good at all. Everybody knew within 3 or 4 hours. You see, it took us 200 miles. We went absolutely flat out at about 90 knots in this war. So it took us this far, over 2 hours to get to back to Alexandria.
That was in November 41, was it?
That was in November 41, yes.
What had happened to you on the Queen Elizabeth between the battle for Crete and the sinking of the Barm?
Well, we did sort of various jobs, like taking the captain of the fleet down to Ismailia, and we were mostly flying from shore, and we did a few, and then we prepared for this Tobruk thing. That took about a fortnight to get ourselves ready for that. But mostly we were ashore. So nothing very much was happening at all. And my observer was a very great friend of the CEO of 805 Squadron, which I joined, the fighter squadron, which was in the desert. And since there was after the ship was completely disabled, I went to see him. Lieutenant Commander Tim Code, his name was, and he'd been in the attack on the Bismarck in Swordfish from Victorious, I think, and he was the this Martlet squadron. And these martlets were fixed wings. They didn't have folding wings. And they'd come from Greece, and they'd been evacuated from Greece. And the squadron was stationed at a place called Martin Bagouche. It's about 100 miles west of Alexandria. And there we were protecting convoys going up to Tobruk with supplies for the beleaguered garrison there. And occasionally, we weren't supposed to do this, but occasionally we used to do some strafing of enemy transports and tanks and so forth. In the desert.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were doing that work that stick out in your mind?
Well, there was one rather amusing interlude. At a certain moment, we had word that a column of tanks was coming in our direction. It was about 10 miles away from the airfield. So the CEO said, "Everybody out into the aircraft and take them back to Alexandria." And I was sharing a tent with another member of the squadron, and he said, "I think what we'd better do is to set fire to our tent, because we don't want the Jerrys to get it." So he got his cigarette lighter out and set fire to the tent, and we went to our aircraft and flew them off. Well, in fact, the Germans, it was only a reconnaissance, and they turned back. So a day later, we were told to go back to Martin Bagouche again, of course, and we had no tent. And the CEO said, "Right," he said, I'm going to charge you for this and stop your pay," and so forth. And we said, "Well, we're only carrying out the scorched earth policy."